Good morning. This is Down to Brass Tacks. It is Friday, October 30th, 2020. I am Christina Hines. The numbers to call are 434-1790 or 266-4862 for the WhatsApp. Before we go to the phones, I wanted to speak to you, the listeners, for a little bit about an event last night that I'm sure some of you all may have watched. And that was this debate. What an interesting thing this was to me. Three candidates were asked a series of questions over 2 hours. What is my assessment of this debate? It was entertaining. It was entertaining television, certainly, but I would not say it was a good debate. So, yes, there was this comedy factor that prevailed, unintentional though it was, but this prevailed over education and the provision of information, in my opinion. So when there are these news or public affairs types programs or engagements, they're sometimes called edutainment. So they're supposed to combine education with entertainment. But the entertainment element should not be because we are sort of amused by the things that are being said that are not meant to be amusing. The entertainment is supposed to be wrapped up in the educational part of the programming. And I really thought that was lacking in yesterday's debate. I was really disappointed by it, to be honest. I always thought that it was a bit unnecessary for a parochial kind of election. Not that it's unnecessary to have debates or public engagement. And if the candidates involved are interested in engaging in this, this is fine. But this is a very small sort of election for one constituency, and the issues that were addressed, I found in the debate, were quite national. Yeah, some of them were specific to the constituency. There's no taking that away. But a lot of the issues were quite general to Barbados, and it would really be difficult for any of these candidates to appropriately address them without having control, being in the party that controls the government. So I wasn't too pleased with the debate, to be honest with you, but I did watch it. 2 hours that I'm not sure whether they helped the people of St. George North to make better informed decisions and to be better able to decide. Just on another note, so that's my little intervention, but just to note, today is the last day of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and as I walked in here this morning, everyone was very nicely dressed in their pink. And November marks the beginning of what is called Movember, which deals with men's health, awareness of men's health issues. So that's my opening. We can go to the phones. Good morning. Down to Brass Tacks.
Good morning, Dr. Hines.
Yes.
Hi, this is Glenn Murray.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Yourself?
I'm good, too.
Good. Good to hear you. Good to be able to exchange a few words with you. It's been a long time.
Okay, go ahead.
I want to endorse what you said about the event last night. I think you're being charitable in calling it a debate. I thought it was just a question and answer session. There was no real engagement of the three cats among themselves to any particular on any regular basis that you can really glean anything else of deep down. I thought it was just a rehash, basically, of a lot of well-known positions by those who represent the parties, except for the entertainment factor that you mentioned about the Mr. Mitchell in participation. But I also thought it was unnecessary, and I wondered why, because this is the first time I knew that Barbados had a debate in a by-election.
Yeah.
It never happened before. And I wonder why. What was the necessity? The close, I can remember, the 1978 by-election in St. Michael's South Central. I was a journalist then at The Advocate, and I was asked to interview Charlie Hines. I think the candidates were interviewed for half an hour over on television, that 45 minutes or whatever it was. So I thought this was a necessary imposition on the public of Barbados. I'm not even sure. Having been a resident of St. George North for the last 35 years, it did not make any sense to me whatsoever. All I could see that is that it was expected to give poverty an advantage. I thought that if I had to evaluate the candidates, I thought Miss Moore did well against the others, but I don't think she was outstanding either. I don't think I was not overwhelmed by her presentations or whatever. But then too, I think there's an old agency, when you start wrong, you end wrong. I think this whole thing was doomed in the manner which was introduced. A factor that Emmanuel Joyce, the president of the Bar Jam, and who was the moderator last night, or the questioner last night, alluded to when he said that the involvement, because it was announced by the Prime Minister, that people were skeptical about it from the very beginning. And I think he's right about that. And I warned him about that a week or so ago. Because it was the first time that I ever heard, my ears went up when I heard that Cabinet had decided mm-hmm. that there should be three debates. That's not the role of Cabinet. Why would Cameron have to be involved? So from then I said, something is wrong here. But then Mr. Joseph played their hand by saying that they were mandated. The only mandate the Barbados Journal had is an informal one from the people of Barbados to say that we expect and trust you. You want you to do a good job, professional, be fair, be balanced, do your work. That's the only mandate. But they can't be mandated, especially by a Prime Minister. So that made it nonsense to me. So I was not surprised it descended into a farce. It was a farce night. It was not even good political theater. And I think it's unfortunate. And I just, as a journalist myself, I still consider myself a journalist. Mm-hmm. I'd like to caution the Bar Jam audience, do not allow yourself or your organization to be sucked into institutions. I don't know if it gratifies your ego, but seeing that you are sitting at a big table, you're doing the big topics and projects. But I just feel you have to stay focused on what your core mission is. Information, examination, investigation, some entertainment too where necessary. But I think your seriousness of your approach, because like somebody said, journalism is really the first draft or the first rough draft of history. Right. Years from now, people will be looking at these tapes, reading newspapers, and to see what happened in Barbados at this time, and they might be shocked at what they see. But if I might just jump to another topic.
Sure, go ahead.
Which relates to that, when you talk about advantage. I want to do the question of the... I'm sure you're familiar with the concept of the advantage of incumbency in politics, mm-hmm. right? And I want to look at this campaign in St. George North as a potential voter. Mm-hmm. My background in politics, I see there's a clear demonstration of what is known as the advantage of incumbency. Do you want me to try to explain that to the public, or you want to?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay.
Tell us what it is.
The advantage of incumbency is where a government in office has a certain advantage because it has access mm-hmm. to a number of resources, people, activities that a government has to its personnel, the ministries, the departments. So therefore, it has access to, it has an advantage. First of all, it has an advantage in the timing of the by-election. That is also the advantage. There's no set time for a by-election. So the mere fact that you choose a date means that you choose a date, which of course would be advantageous to you or your candidate. And we know that in politics, timing, life is that timing is critical. Timing is always critical.
Yeah.
So when you see what is playing out in St. George North, and the government is able to do things to sort of sweeten the pot, so to speak, to make them and their party and their candidate more attractive to the public. Like the woods there at Flat Rock. I've been here for 35 years. I think that's about the third time that probably been cleaned up and just went back to bush again. I don't think it's accidental, coincidental. I don't believe in coincidence in the first place. But when that happens in a campaign, at the start of a campaign, it means that obviously government know they want to do something to impress the electorate. Road repairs.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my and this is a staple in by election. I remember 1976 in the city of Bridgetown by election. On the last night of the campaign, the night before voting day, I was at the Advocate and I was asked to come up to. I went to Kensington Road just to see into New Orleans and saw where they were. It's 6 o'clock, 6:30 in the evening, getting dark. We had actually put in down Barbara Green the night before the election. The Ivory was still hot.
Yeah.
See the steam coming out of that water. So, and Dr. Lyle Carmichael lost to Billy Miller. So that didn't make any difference. But it had gone to that ridiculous length where the government of the day then, the DLP, thought that within hours of voting, they can put down a Barbara Green Road, and that would enhance the thing. So I thought, and then there's the question of pit toilets that are being now cleaned up and fixed and readied and evaporating, eliminated, etc. Again, in this time, did the plan date?
But this is something I've heard from the time I was a child.
Right, no.
And that was some time ago. Let's put it
okay. No, I'm saying, of course, we try to eliminate them over a process of time. I think that, and Barbados has done a good job in it. But then when you have this crash program kind of thing, then there's the restarting of the pavilion down on the Glebe.
Yes.
So all these things are mount up to an advantage. And then there's
actually forms an advantage, though? Are people really swayed by these activities that happen on the eve of an election?
I think some people are, because they say, well, at least they get it.
Right.
It might be late, but at least they got it, right? So I'm still having an advantage. I'm still having my life, my standard of living has improved by the mere fact with all these things. But I think the sweetest of all over would be the provision of jobs. Mm-hmm. I'm absolutely sure that some of those 40 school monitors,
yes,
some of them have come from St. George North. Mm-hmm. I'm absolutely sure that some of the 500 people who are being recruited to work with the senior citizens who need with the help with the national system board to improve the health conditions, etc., of the elderly in society. I'm sure. So it also gives the amount of patronage. You can use government funds quite legitimately because they're the government to do these things at a particular time in a particular way to seek or get an advantage. But I also want to look quickly at the type of the platforms and the type of campaigning, the mechanics, the grandstanding, the stage, the setting, and whatnot. I think
so. You mean the actual physical campaigning, or you mean some of the online? Because social media has been used quite a lot in this campaign and in the previous general election as well.
Right. No, I'm talking about the physical, traditional campaign, where you set up platforms and whatnot. Obviously, the other parties who do not have the advantage of incumbency, and given that they're now starting their starved resources, even the Democratic Labour Party, I have had bare bones, minimal campaign, not lights and displays of posters, etc. Have bare bones, a minimalist kind of approach, which is good, especially coming in this environment of COVID and harsh economic times. Mm-hmm. That is to be expected. But really, come with government is concerned, the campaign that we've seen, the physical campaign, the general meeting, the mass meetings, whatever you call them, seems to be just an extension of the last 2018 campaign. Right. So I'd say all of that amongst my thing that they are enjoying the advantage of incumbency.
Okay.
Thank you.
Fair enough. Well, thank you very much for educating us. I appreciate the call. It's nice to hear you. Good morning. This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Good morning, Dr. Hanks.
Good morning.
Do you believe there's a political class in Barbados?
I believe there are people that think there is and that they belong to it.
What percentage of the people sitting in Parliament would you say are from the political class?
I could not say, because I don't really believe that there is a true political class in Barbados. I say this because all of this talk about pedigree and family lineage and so on, this is a short history we're talking about. If you look back 200 years, all of us are coming, our foreparents are coming from slavery. So, you know, this idea that there are some people in our society that are somehow, you know, they have some long lineage and connection to a political legacy, to me is sort of artificial, because it's a very short time frame. So you're asking the wrong person to get an answer to that question. What do you think?
Well, I've heard people speak about the political class, but I see people from all classes entering politics. I don't know if you could really say that there's a political class.
I agree with you.
If there's a political class, you would not have grassroots politicians.
Yeah, but I think people are talking about a certain group of people who may have family connections And these family connections perhaps are useful for them inside of political parties. And knowing how Barbadian society works and Caribbean societies, you know, people know you're somebody because you're related to this person or, you know, from this family and that kind of thing. But in terms of a really true political legacy, I think I don't really see there being a whole lot of that in Barbados. It's still under development. Let's put it that way.
All right.
Why did you mention it, though? You asked because what?
I was just asking.
Okay.
The final thing I would like to look at is the what you would call the rebranding of the BLP. Oh, I think an attempt now is being made to rebrand the BLP. Now, you know that former Prime Minister Arthur, he served 14 years, and he would have had a base not only in the general membership, but in the political arm. Would you agree with that?
Maybe. Go ahead.
Right. Now, Prime Minister Motley, she's the new leader or political leader. So she is trying to establish her own base.
Okay.
And her own base in the party.
Yes.
Now, I have always made the point that there were two factions in the BLP, the Alpha faction and the Motley faction. Do you agree with that?
I couldn't say. I'm not inside the BLP. I've heard that, but I cannot say with any certainty that this exists or whether it is just rumor.
Now, after the 2018 election, the Prime Minister was always mouthing that all hands on deck and more hands make light work. Can you explain to me how a politician who had held two ministries was not given a cabinet position in her cabinet?
You want me to answer that?
Yeah, if you could explain. If some person is saying that more hands make light work, and there were persons being appointed to the cabinet who were first-time politicians, and some person who had held two portfolios was left out, isn't there something strange about that?
Perhaps. I can only speculate here. So on the one hand, one would want to give people experience, because we cannot always live in the past. So if we are to move forward, new people have to have opportunities to have experience, and some people may need to step aside to allow that, and perhaps they can function in mentorship roles to facilitate that. But I really cannot say what the thinking of the Prime Minister and the Barbados Labour Party was or is. I can only speculate. So my speculation is that if you have new people, you may need to give them some chances to lead. The only way people are going to become leaders is if they're given opportunities to lead and to do important work. So, you know, we can weigh both things. We can't just keep having the same people doing the work all the time. We have to share it out and give others a chance to show their abilities.
But this only applied to one person. Glenn Clark.
That person was maybe just unfortunate.
But there were other people there who had served before as ministers, and they were given back ministries.
Well, they were fortunate then.
No, I am not saying it as that. Mm-hmm. I'm saying it as an he crossed. Mm-hmm. And I categorize him as a member of the Alpha faction.
All right.
I also characterize Glenn Clark as a member of the Alpha faction.
Mm-hmm.
And you see now he has been asked to take up a position in Canada.
Yes.
You also see Wood leaving the party. And he was a member. I categorize him too as a member of the Alpha faction.
All right.
So I'm saying that the same way people are saying that the Republican Party in the States is Trump's Republican Party. I think what they're saying here in Barbados is that the BLP is the Motley's BLP.
Thank you for your comment on perhaps what may be the changing of the guard. Good morning. This is Down to Brass Tacks. I'm Christina Hines.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. How about you?
I'm just here, good.
Okay.
I just want to really concur with everything you have said from the beginning of the program. The so-called debate that they had on the CBC TV 8 last night was it was like watching a Tom and Jerry cartoon event, to be quite honest. The three people that were involved in this debate, the preparation was lacking. If you really want to convince people and you want to gel with the constituents of St. George North, there was no really gelling from 93 of them.
Okay. What did you think about one of the candidates being frequently muted?
Well, that was amazing. That really amazed me. For lack of a better word, he should not be saying, or if he was saying things, even if it didn't involve colorful language, he was saying things that could get him or the
broadcaster.
The broadcaster in some serious hot water. And when you are going into a debate, which, in my opinion, I don't think there was a need for any debate, honestly, because this is a by-election.
Yeah.
In a by-election, a lot of people don't understand the difference between a by-election and a general election. Okay? In a by-election, you have a lot more time to prepare to do things. In a general election, you don't have much time at all.
Time in a by-election?
Yeah. Like, for instance, for me, yes, you have a lot more time in a by-election, because a by-election, you're just focusing on one area.
One constituency, okay.
Yeah, one constituency. In the general election, you have to focus on everything that is to deal with, not only Barbados, also that is out of Barbados as well, in the Caribbean sector and what have you. Okay, because you're dealing with both internal and general topics that you must. You in the general election is a lot more work, I find, right? That has to be put in from the candidate's perspective, from the present government, or even from the opposition perspective. Okay, whereas in a by-election, though, right? You're focused on one area that is obviously lacking in a lot of things that the people would need, would want to see, probably better representation, or if they had good representation for it and that person has been removed or left for whatever reason, they want to see if you're going to come in and do 10 times better, 20 times better. And if you do so, if you are chosen, what can you do for the people of St. George North?
And you don't think that the debate helped to bring out what they will do?
No. Absolutely not. If anybody, you don't have to be a politician, you don't have to go to a big university or college. At a 4-year-old, watch that. They would get a good laugh, honestly. Because the questions that were put forward by the chairperson, also the questions that were put forward, I had a problem with what kind of questions he was asking. If you're going to ask a question, you zero in. So tell me, like, for instance, if you ask me a question, you are asking me, so what you do intend to do about the roads in St. George North? What do you intend to do about the smelliness of the different pigsties and the issues, the water wars that some parts of St. George North would have, like in Newbury, like in Applewaits? And you know the places because you've traversed them. You hear the people. You focus on that, and then you challenge each candidate, okay, on that, not right. What I heard last night. This boy claiming that they have about construction, about this and about that, and then with the prison issue, a lot of different things that it wasn't really focusing on St. George. Those issues, as you said earlier, were mainly for national, more nationalistic issues than really focusing on St. George North, right?
And fair enough.
The Toni Morrison lady had an opportunity there again to really show her mettle and look straight into the camera and talk with the people of St. George North, people of St. George North, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. And she can probably learn a thing or two from Comrade Joe Biden in the States when talking to, about the people, talking with the people. And mm-hmm. if you watch the debates in the States, despite what the mad guy in the White House is trying to do, right, if you watch the debates in the States, you understand, Joe Biden deals with the people, you understand? And this is what the president candidate that is running for St. George North, Floyd Reefer, is doing. He is dealing with
well,
the people.
Well, we're not having canvassing
people.
On the show today.
No, no. I'm just saying, that pertaining to that. So for me, the debate last night was neither here nor there. I think it was unnecessary, really and truly. But they saw a need for it, and to me, it was as Glenn Murray said, the gentleman said, it was quite entertaining. It was more of entertainment than really hearing what you would do for them, what can be done, what you intend to do, or what you would like to see happening, or what have you. So, otherwise, what is your opinion? I want to ask you a question. What is your opinion on climate change in Barbados? Do you think that there's enough focus on climate change?
Oh, that's a very good question. I think there certainly is focus when we listen to the Prime Minister, certainly in international fora. She does address climate change quite often as one of the critical issues that affects us in Barbados as well as the Caribbean. And this is one of the reasons why we should get certain types of treatment by international institutions, especially now with COVID. Combined with that, this is a very vulnerable place and a region. And the way in which we see the ministries currently set up also reflects some emphasis on that. But I think there's a contradiction too, because while we are focused under this government, under the previous government, there was some emphasis as well in terms of things they had in place for alternative energy and so on. I think in the income tax regime, you could get some tax refunds and so on. So although there's this emphasis, the contradictory thing that we find in Barbados and the Caribbean, in my opinion, is this continued emphasis on construction of hotels and other buildings along the coastline, which will be very vulnerable when we have sea level rise. So it's also an insurance issue. Eventually, it can become an insurance issue, because if we do have rising sea levels and these repeated strong storms, which I really hope we don't. This can cause some issues for those who are insuring these buildings. It can make insurance very expensive, and that can be passed on to the rest of us
in
the country.
Yeah, I agree with you. If I may just quickly interject, because we've got other callers, I don't want to take up nobody else's time.
Yeah.
I quite agree with that, because I find that our coastal borders are not really protected and really seen after the way they ought to be seen after. And then there's this a lot of buildings in Barbados right now are a lot of insurance buildings. Therefore, they're taken away from a lot of the greenery and the actual attractions of nature. And they find that nature has taken really a back seat in regards to that area. And also there's an issue too with there's very lack of protection, I find, also with our reefs. Our reefs are not protected. Therefore, the species of the reefs are in danger. You have a lot of these ships that were anchored, and then we had a lot of ships anchored here. I didn't really see no ready protection from the reefs, and it would have been good to hear from Kurt Humphrey what was his position on protecting the reefs. It would have been good to hear from the now Minister of Tourism, Lisa Cummins. She's in charge of the port. What was your position on the protection of the reefs and having those boats out there anchored so long? Right? Because obviously they were out there for monetary reasons, because the longer a cruise liner stays docked here, the more money we make off of them. Right? And that was all the main focus was. The main focus wasn't nothing else, which was a wrong kind of focus.
Yeah. Well, I know they have the difficult job of trying to find a balance, but this is a serious issue, and it's one that we really can't reverse. So thank you for that intervention. I'm glad somebody's speaking about climate change on this program. Good morning. This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Good morning, Dr. Hines.
Morning.
I want to speak this morning not on anything pertaining to the election.
Okay, that's
but
fine.
But I want to look down the road at where the Caribbean, especially Barbados, could be going to.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anywhere that we could be going into a one-party state?
I really would
hope not. Democratically elected or otherwise?
I hope
not. You could have a democratically elected one-party state.
I don't know. Are you asking me, or this is a rhetorical question?
I'm asking you if we could have a democratically elected one-party state.
Well, we certainly could have a democracy elect a single party, as we saw in the last election. And if the democracy continues to do that, it will end up looking like one.
Good. Mm-hmm. But that is the danger that I'm looking at. Because, as you said, we, and I know, that we democratically elected 30 people. Now, nobody goes to the polling booth to vote for opposition. You go to vote for a government. Everybody have the same idea of pertaining to a particular party. You eventually end up with a democratically elected one-party state.
Right.
Now, who would be the people now to make sure that this democratically elected one-party state does not infringe on the rights of the human being?
Well, that would be all of us. And the even political parties that are not sitting in the parliament, they still have roles to play. They have continued roles to play in checking the government. We all have the roles to play of keeping our representatives in check. So we can raise particular issues about how our business is being conducted, why it is being conducted in certain ways rather than others, how money is spent, how resources are allocated. We can ask these questions. And we have to allow our representatives to know that they are accountable to us because we are the ones that vote them in and can make other choices. And we saw that in the last election, I think.
Exactly. That's why I'm saying democratically elected. And a military... And a military device, a military where it is being done, where a military group take over a government. You know, one of the first thing a military government does is to take over the media or radio stations, or what the case may be. Am I right or wrong?
That's one of the things that happens, yes, to control the messaging to the public.
The messaging.
But that's not happening here.
If in this country we are...
Certainly not on this program.
I don't know. I am asking questions.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm just asking of the
eventualities. You're asking questions or asking answers?
Are the eventualities.
Go ahead.
Then you have organizations that cannot speak out.
Right.
And then when you have people in the organization who decide to associate with the government and not the defense of the underprivileged who may be crying out.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we go from there?
What do you think?
I think we are going down a slippery slope.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe if we don't pull it back, if we don't sit down and study where we are going, I see blood going flow in the streets of Barbados.
Really?
I feel so. I may sound aggressive, I may sound strange.
Yes.
But when people realize that nobody is listening to them and they cannot speak in a democratic country, that is where you find the fellas on the side of the road can come with a device.
And you think that's what's happening?
Well, I ain't thinking nothing. I ask a question and I'm watching the tide because I am seeing some things happening in this country.
Uh-huh.
That you cannot speak I am saying openly, you are being shut down. You can't talk about this and you can't talk about that. I dare you call it a democratic country. Give me a break. Thank you, Miss Hines, for the time you give to me.
All right, you're welcome. Good morning. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning. Good morning, Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Yeah, debates to my mind are a healthy exercise to hear from your prospective representative.
Okay.
And I also believe that at the constitution level, it is a good place to start so that when you get into the House, if you're elected, then you already know what to, you know, your mind's positioned and you know what to expect. Mm-hmm. I think it's unfortunate that Mr. Reefer didn't come on. I wanted to see him because I didn't get a chance to go to the meetings to hear him. So I had wanted to see him. I think that he would have done an excellent job last night.
Well, we don't know.
We don't know. We will never know. So I think it's unfortunate, he and the others.
So you thought this debate was good last night?
Pardon?
You thought the debate was informative?
In my opinion,
okay,
it was.
All right.
I'd like to hear from the prospective candidates what they would do if they are elected. Nothing wrong with that.
And you live in St. George North?
I don't want to say at this time.
Okay, fair enough. Go ahead. You had another point?
To Mr. Emmanuel Joseph.
Okay.
And the questions that he raised. I think the questions were very good questions. They were broad. I think they were very good.
Okay.
Right? So, to me, I ain't see nothing wrong with the debate. Okay. It's a healthy exercise. Thank you.
You're most welcome. Good morning. This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Hi, good morning, Katrina. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. It's Christina.
Christina, okay, my apologies. I'm christening you. Listen, I just want to make a brief intervention here to say, I noted that the outgoing ambassador of the Argentine Republic to Barbados, Gustavo Spandiani, stated that he's cautioning government against implementing bilateral programs and initiatives for residents without consulting those intended to benefit. The diplomat said he wished decision makers would check with the people they're making choices for when it came to putting bilateral agreements in place. And he talked about, you know, you need to know the society, identify the needs, right? And he talks about doing these things bottom up. Cooperation, for me, he said, is to work from the bottom up and not top down. Mm-hmm. I took that quote, and he's talking about mainly about bilateral arrangements, but he talked about other initiatives as well. And then I jump now to the quote I saw in the papers from the Home Affairs Minister, Mr. Wilfred Abrams, I think it is a day last week, saying government is soon going to bring to the House the whole set of changes they want to make to the immigration laws. People keep referring to Ms. Motley and this administration as appearing to be very dictatorial in nature. And every day they make certain decisions, they reinforce this perception or this reality.
But do they do things any differently from other governments? The previous government was consulting.
Yes, they do.
Oh, okay.
For example, the last DLP government, when they wish to make changes to the immigration laws, and they weren't as drastic as the ones this government is proposing, they had town hall meetings across the country.
Okay.
And I'm
on immigration?
On immigration.
Okay.
Because I attended.
All right, go
and
ahead.
I am saying to you that this government is seeking to overhaul the whole concept of citizenship and the times they're removing immigration status that you get when you come in before you move to a permanent resident, etc. I am saying we, the people, we, the citizens, need to have a say on these things. Unlike Mr. Pandiani, the Argentine Republic ambassador said, the people need to be consulted. You have to involve people in initiatives. And immigration, the whole concept of who is a citizen of Barbados and how you become a citizen is something not for 30 or 29 members of parliament or a prime minister who seems to think her vision is the only vision, but she must involve people. And I am incensed about that because I have my clippings. I'm not going to go through it this morning. There are a number of things that are questionable, and I think that needs to be spoken and needs to have discussion with the people. There should not be these massive changes only going through Parliament. That's number one. And the other thing is, I note in a time when we had 40,000, maybe it's reduced now, some went back to work to put 30,000, 25, I don't know, unemployed persons coming out of COVID. And yet we are seeing more consultants coming on board. In this one, we are seeing a Mr. Justin Ram, who formerly worked at the CDB bank. Now he's been hired as technical advisor, economic technical advisor to the Prime Minister. How many of those does this Prime Minister need? You know, when people come on and they say, kudos to the Prime Minister, and she's wonderful, and she's the best Prime Minister. How many technical and economic advisor did Mr. Chris Sinclair have? How many did Mr. Sandiford have? How many did Mr. Owen Arter have? How many did Mr. Brice St. John have or Tom Adams have? What is so unusual about this Prime Minister that she have Mr. Maskell, Mr. Avinash Prasad, Mr. Greenwich, Mr. She has Ryan Strong, Marcia Cattle, and now she has Justin Ram. And I'm saying this is a slap.
It does seem like a lot. It does suffering. Seem like a lot. But, and it is expensive. My concern is the expense, not necessarily the help. So the cost of the help. But... I can't answer those other questions for you because, as far as I know, many governments have had a lot of consultants. They may not be in this particular area. Well, I can't verify because I have not quantified all of the consultants in all of the areas. So maybe these ones are concentrated in a particular area. But this has been an ongoing concern. How much of taxpayers' money is being used to pay consultants, and not so much how much is being used to pay consultants, what are we gaining from the consultants? So are we getting something that we would not have otherwise been able to get in the absence of these consultants? Are they doing things that those who work in various ministries do not have the expertise to do? If that is the fact, the other question for me is, why is it that the ministries don't have the requisite expertise to run the country?
Before you go there, you should ask, how many consultants did Mr. Chris Sinclair have in the Ministry of Finance? How many?
I do not
know. How many did Mr. Owen
have? You said you have the statistics, so you can tell me.
I have the statistics as it relates to the number of dollars allocated to consultants. Mr. Joseph Attlee in 2018 pointed it out. The Democratic Labour Party for 2018 allocated just over $215,000 for consultants for that year. When the Mayor Motley administration came in May 2018, they moved that to, I think it was either $4 million or $7 million. And it kept going up and going up every year to $14 million and then for this year to $21 million. Yeah. And I am saying to you, you have consultants, I mean, never before seen. You don't know the numbers of consultants. So you can't say every government has consultants. That is true, but not in the numbers that we are seeing now. And for what purposes? And I am saying to you, I am very, very concerned that in the time when people are suffering hardships, that a government would be so bold as to keep adding on consultants and advisors. We are seeing no demonstrated, success or results from these consultants coming on, and yet we are adding to this, and people are without jobs and going home. And you said to a government the last time, don't take back your 10%, you have to share the pain of the people. Really, what is going on? Where are the persons up at Kayville and the other commentators? Where are the people
I'm
who
one
are going
here
to
now.
Speak out? Sorry?
I'm one of the people from up in Kayville. So, you know, as I said, I do have a concern over the cost, but I'm not so concerned with the number as much as I am concerned with how expensive it is. But we have to go to a break.
Thank you.
This is Down to Brass Tacks. Thanks for calling.